Yes, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more closely deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Reg and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Out of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given 5-minute and 1-minute reminders when it's time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Deborah.
Hi, my name is Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 6, 2006. My sponsor is Clancy I. My home group is the Escondido Speaker Meeting. If you don't know where that's at, it's in San Diego County. There was a Pacific Group member who got sober in Pacific Group that moved to San Diego and became the secretary of that meeting about 30 years ago, I think. And it sort of has become, like what you would call a Pacific Group satellite meeting. We try and be respectful and show respect to AA at that meeting. One of the things I really like that we do at that meeting is when somebody takes a cake, like if you're getting 40 years, you're getting 40 candles. You're not getting a 4 and a 0. And anyway, so I started drinking when I was 16 years old. I grew up in a household where there weren't alcoholics. I come from a good family. I come from people that feel bad if their library books are overdue. And when I got to be about 13 or 14, I don't know why, I just started getting dark. I just started spending a lot of time alone in my room listening to music. And not like death metal or anything, just time alone in my room listening to music. And I just kind of, my family was gone one day and there was some red wine and I drank it and it had no effect on me. And about a month later, I drank some of my dad's Wild Turkey or Old Granddad. It was whiskey. And I want to say my problem is alcohol. I don't have another problem, and I'm calling it alcohol because I'm in an AA meeting. It's like it's the stuff you pour in the glass. That's my problem. And anyway, I got really sick from that. I don't know why, I just stayed preoccupied with it. And I started dating someone who was kind of out of my league socially shortly after. And I started drinking and I started noticing that my self-esteem wasn't so low when I drank. I felt comfortable and more relaxed. I was always really overweight and it didn't make me feel thin. It just made me feel voluptuous or something. And it just kind of made everything kind of feel like it was going to be okay. When I drink alcohol, gives me just a lot of optimism about things I shouldn't be optimistic about. I'm not going to go to work today and I'll probably get fired for my absenteeism, but that's okay because I'll get another job. It just gives me this optimism that's unrealistic. Anyway, that's how my drinking started. And by the time my drinking progressed really fast. By the time I was 21, I was sent to my first, I guess you would call, it was a 30-day rehab. My drinking was always abnormal. When I went to parties, I always had to keep some in my purse. It was just like always secretive because I didn't want to be rude and like ask for more because I'm always thinking of others, right? And anyway, I went to my first rehab when I was 21. And I had done a geographic right before then. I grew up in a really boring suburban area. And I thought if I went to New York, it'd be so exciting there. I wouldn't want to drink. But I found that New York didn't cure my alcoholism. Actually, is all I did there was I stayed in a dorm for like 2 weeks and I drank stuff like Thunderbird around the clock. And I'd take a taxi and go get more. And my family flew me back and I went to the spin dry. And I really didn't understand alcoholism. I just felt like if you can't get a blood test for it, how do I know I'm an alcoholic? And one of the things they say in AA, they talk about it, once you become a pickle, you can't go back to being a cucumber. I always thought of my drinking as like having a bad cold, like it'll go into remission. And what I know is it never did. Anyway, I was in and out of AA from the time I was 21 to 40. And I thought my problem was I was inconstitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. But what I've discovered is I really wasn't thoroughly following the path. That was the issue. I didn't know that right away, though. So, thank you. So, anyway, what happened was by the end of my drinking, I couldn't handle hard liquor. I could only handle beer and wine. And I was too drunk and slurring my words to call in for work. Like I'd wake up drunk the next morning and I'd hear the radio when it wasn't being played. And showers became work. And so I was going to lose my job. That's like such a stupid consequence, but that's what's got me sober. I had lost other jobs before because of absenteeism. I guess I was just worn out. And I called my sister and she came over and I found this place, this behavioral place that would take me, and I did an outpatient thing and they wanted to put me on medication. I didn't want to take any medication. I was fine. I was exercising. I just didn't want any more garbage in my system. And I found a lady at the Oceanside Alano Club who had sponsored me before, and I asked her if she'd sponsor me again. And she said, no, she said, I gave you my best shot. She goes, but she spent a lot of time with me and she took me out to coffee. And she said, don't talk about this time or next time, or there may be, don't talk about this time or last time, or there may be a next time. So anyway, I was living in Poway and I got this sponsor at, the Poway Alano Club, and she helped me through the steps. I started going to regular meetings. I was going to my jobs. I thought of commitments as just sort of like do-gooder charity work, not very essential to sobriety. I did have a coffee commitment, though. And she took me through the steps. I started my amends. And then about 5 years sober, I wasn't talking to her anymore. She was still my sponsor. I just didn't like know what to call her about. And I had heard Clancy speak, and I knew I was going to drink again. I didn't want to. I just knew I was going to. And somebody sent a payment into where I work in a Midnight Mission envelope, and I kept it for a couple of years. I don't know why. And so anyway, I wrote him to thank him for being a really great speaker. And then at the end, I asked him to sponsor me, and he called me like 36 hours later, and he said he would. I just kind of like knew things were going to be okay. I was just kind of nervous he was going to ask me to do things that other people in AA were doing. What Clancy really helped me with, and what I wasn't doing, is I had done a thorough fifth step and I had started like some of the amends. I was in school and I was paying people back, and I had done amends with my family. I didn't know how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That sounds like so dumb. I did not. And he told me at one point I had painted myself into a corner in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me to do things like go up to people and say, hi, my name is Debbie. And I would be like, what am I supposed to say? And he would say, you can say something like, I haven't had to drink today. He told me to start sitting at the meetings I went to on an inside couch. I was always a back row person. And I started doing that. I started having a home group that I actually went to, just like not when it was convenient. I started going up to the Pacific Group at his suggestion. He wanted me to ride with this guy, Dave, in San Diego, because I could get the Diamond Lane. It's like, I want to do this alone. And he was like, no, go with Dave. You get to be in the Diamond Lane. So I started going with Dave so I could be in the Diamond Lane. And I feel like I'm part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't wanted to drink. Clancy's given me a lot of direction on just how to live these principles in my life, dealing with people. And I think I have 1 minute left. So what I can say is, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just been, it's school for how to live sober. Like, if you don't want to drink anymore, this is how to stay stopped and how to live sober. It's helped me. It's given me a quieter mind, and I'll keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Debbie. Our second 10-minute speaker is Paul.
Paul Jacoby, alcoholic. I have a sobriety date of 11/17/18. My home group is the Pacific Group. My sponsor is Mark D. Just quick little shout out to my road dogs and to the PG Cookie Crew. And hi, Mom. So I'm here to tell you guys exactly what it was like, what happened, what it's like now in a general way. First of all, I'm one of those alcoholics that gladly tells you that he was born an alcoholic. I believe I was born with this disease. From when I was born until I was about 12 years old, I just always thought I was always so angry and uppity and like, what's wrong with me? You know, I'm not the person that grew up in a bad, wrecked family or anything. I had wonderful parents. I had a wonderful brother, a wonderful sister. And I, at the time, you know, like I almost was resentful of them because they were so wonderful and everyone loved them. And I hated myself. So it was very hard for me to figure out, like, why does everyone love them and not love me? When really, you could have given me all the love in the world, and I wouldn't accept it. Long story short, that 12th year of my life was really the first time that I ran into alcohol. Long story short, me and my sister in our backyard, we chugged a bottle of wine together. I really don't remember much of that drinking because I drank it so fast, being scared of being caught, and I just blacked out. My first drink was a blackout, and I blacked out almost immediately. The next day I woke up and I asked my sister, you know, what happened to the booze? Because we had the wine and the cigarettes, and she's like, you drank it all. I was like, oh, wow. Later on that week, my mother caught me. This is while I was living in Texas, by the way. We jumped around state to state growing up. My dad was always got job changes and whatnot, but in Texas, my mom had a best friend who told her about, like, when her parents caught her smoking cigarettes and drinking, they forced her to drink a lot and smoke cigarettes back to back to get her sick, and so she'd never do it again, and it worked great. So the next week after I drank that wine, my mom thought it was a great idea when she caught me smoking cigarettes to get me to drink Jack Daniels and smoke a pack of cigarettes. That is the time where I fell in love with this thing called alcohol. She was like, drink this really fast and smoke these. And my brother and sister are watching on both sides. And I just remember thinking, wow, I am so much cooler than both of you two. And man, I can drink this all day, keep it coming. And I just remember looking at my mom and just the look on her face, realizing, man, this was a mistake. And Paul reacts differently than most people. And she always called me her little alcoholic after that. And I believe previously before it, but I'll just get right into it. Up until, you know, after that, I went through junior high, high school, and college. And it was filled with disappointment, a lot of disappointment to people. I had suicide attempt. I had multiple rehabs and multiple DUIs. And I was popular in school. I was very good at athletics. I went to college for sports, and with the college story, I dropped out my first year after it was just all disappointments and mostly coming from my drinking and using. Long story short, I went into, I got my third DUI. And when I was 23, my parents forced me to go to AA, and I went there, and I went to a few meetings, got a sponsor, did a few steps, and I went through my fifth step with him, and after my fifth step, I kind of felt so good about myself. I told him, but he's like, okay, we got to go home and do your hour meditation, all this stuff. And I never did that. And when I talked to him next, I kind of told him, like, yo, I made my apologies. I got this, type of thing. Like, dude, I'm good. I'm golden. And little did I know, I was not golden. I knew I had an alcohol problem. I didn't think I had a using problem. That's just my story. And 9 months later, I started, testing out, I don't know how to, the good words for this, greenery. I'll just say that. And next thing you know, 24 till I was 29, I was out. Very periodically, small amounts drinking, but using hardcore. And I told everyone, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm sober, meaning I use a bunch of outside issues all day, every day, but I do not drink. And long story short, I made a million crazy moves. I ended out telling my dad, went in on a business with me. Yo, Dad, I'm done with this business. I'm moving to California. And just take care of my stuff, my apartment, all this stuff. You can pay for everything. And I just dipped from Toledo, Ohio, where I was living. And I did it very, just in a total rage. But I just hopped on the next Greyhound, came out to Los Angeles. The next 6 to 9 months were spent jumping hostel. At the last month or two, I started drinking again. I was putting down more than a handle of liquor a day, and it just stopped working. The liquor stopped working. The drugs stopped quit working years prior. And I needed help. So I went and I started calling, rehabs, and I got a hold of one. They're like, there's a rehab on Tarzana that takes Medicaid or Medi-Cal or whatever they give you when you're homeless in Los Angeles, that I had. And I went out to TCC, Tarzana Treatment Center, or TTC or whatever. And I got in. Next thing you know, it comes, like, my week comes up where I can go to an outside meeting, and the bus is already filled up. But there was this guy, Donnie H., that showed up, this rock star looking guy with long hair, a white shirt with a big gold chain. And I was like, he just looks at me and he goes, yo, dude, you want to go to this meeting? I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. And I have this workout shirt, and I go to this meeting called Pacific Group on Wednesday night. And, man, you guys looked impressive. And I did not. I had a workout shirt on and some shorts. And I didn't know that was not a proper outfit for the meeting. But everyone knew I was new for some reason. It was so weird. And I thought I was just really popular again. But long story short, Thomas S. was speaking that night. And I know people are uncomfortable using last names, but that man sold me on the Pacific Group. He's a fellow Toledoan, and I knew I was home. I knew I was home at Pacific Group. And that means I have 1 minute left. Long story short, I committed to doing the steps here in the Pacific Group. I committed to listening to a sponsor and asking him exactly, yeah, this is what I'm dealing with today. And I don't know. I'm sick of making bad decisions. Like, I've been running the show my whole life, and what do I need to do? And, you know, most of it's giving, you know, surrendering to a higher power, following through the steps, and just keeping my mouth shut and just doing my part. And I know a lot of newcomers say, you know, I'm not living the dream yet, but in my perception, I'm living the dream. I'm just living the beginning of it. And if this is living the beginning of the dream, I'm so blessed. I'm so glad that I met all of you people. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Paul. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group conscience in much the same manner as the 12 steps apply to the individuals. Tonight, Pat C. has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you, Reg. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal.
Our main speaker tonight is Mark C.
Thank you. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is the 8th of the 2nd, 2005. And my home group is the By the Book Speakers Group, the BYUE. I'd like to thank Marty for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope tonight. And it's an absolute privilege to be asked to speak at the Pacific Group. I can remember when I first came to AA, I was so nervous and terrified that I had to sit in my hands from the shaking, you know. If someone asked me to share at the meeting, I would be stuttering and stammering, but things have got, you know, a little bit better since then. So some of you may identify with my story, and I'd like to qualify myself as an alcoholic before I get started into my talk. On page 44 of the Big Book, it allows me to do that. If and when I honestly want to, and you cannot quit entirely, or when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I could definitely answer yes to both of them questions. So why did it take me so long to move from probably to definitely and to completely give myself to this simple program? Well, the answer is I simply wasn't ready. And I definitely was nowhere willing. You know, I have a family of alcoholism, a history of alcoholism, and I was brought up seeing and believing and drinking and living whatever way you wanted was the way that a man should be. It's just, you know, it's just what I've seen, you know. And I grew up not fitting in. I always felt separate, different, and alone. And I did not like people, actually. And I was born on this small little island, funny enough, called Ireland, where we drink alcoholically in the womb, and everything revolves around alcohol. You know, and in We Agnostics, it described me perfectly. I was having trouble in personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotions. I was known to be a bit sensitive. I was prone to misery and depression. You know, my life was an absolute mess from the beginning. And I just couldn't make a living, you know. I was unhappy. I was full of self-pity most of the time. I was always full of fear. And I wondered when I would get found out. I had no idea what was on me. But I knew it wasn't normal. I have since found out through AA and sponsorship that I had a broken spirit. And that the human powers of medicine and psychiatry, it couldn't fix that. I had no idea what was wrong with me. My solution was to plug into faulty power source, self-pity, aggression, violence. I remember at school using my aggression to fit in with the older boys so I would get protection that I needed. My nickname was Savage. I then found out that what I thought was the perfect solution to my spiritual malady, and that was to be alcohol. Apparently, I was a very contrary baby. My mum told me my granddad used to feed us alcohol from birth, and it looked like I loved it. I took my first real drink at the age of 11. And then from the get-go, I loved the effect produced in me. I could do or say anything, and strangely enough, I don't remember feeling the same way about my first cup of tea. I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. I could function, but I had no memory of days or weeks at a time. I left home at 14 to start an apprenticeship to be a jockey, riding the horses. From the day I landed on that course, I was drawn to the dark and negative sides of others just like myself. I was in a full-time job before I was 16, and I was good at what I was doing, riding the horses. I soon became a frequent drinker and drank with men twice my age. I was walking home one day, drunk, on the road. I was stopping cars and nobody would pick me up. The head lad at the time was going back to the stables to give the horse extra water, and it was as it was summertime. I remember he picked me up and he told me to go to bed. I was smashed, but I insisted I would help him. So he sent me into the barn where the water bucket was on the one side and the horse's feed manger was on the other side. I ended up filling in all the feed mangers with water instead. He was there till 2 o'clock in the morning, emptying the water out of feed mangers. He nearly killed me. The next day I told my boss I was having heart palpitations and I felt so sick. He sent me home and until the head lad told him exactly what had happened. Funny enough, I lost that job a month later. My boss moved me from the town into private accommodation to get me away from the drinking, but I always found a way. I got into a fight one night with two other guys. We were fighting over a girl, typical, you know, young men. We beat the hell out of each other. We got arrested. We got taken to hospital and we got stitched up. And then we got taken to the police cells. And because our clothes was all covered in blood, we were given these white suits to wear. The next day, none of us decided to press charges, so we were all released. I was the only one that had some money, and the taxi, it wouldn't come to the police station to pick us up. So we walked to the nearest pub in our white suits, and the locals bought us drink all night to hear about our story. It was absolute madness, you know. And this was on a Tuesday night with a normal night out with the boys. I had an accident that nearly killed me on New Year's Eve. I was found in a hole with water in it. It was -5 degrees. I was frozen. I had been out drinking with the boys and I obviously decided to walk home. And this was obviously done in a total blackout. I went to take a shortcut across the fields as I always did. And this is where I fell into this hole. I woke up in hospital 2 days later after being in a coma. I had absolutely no idea what had happened to me. My parents got a priest in to see me because they thought I was going to die. Most people would have never drank again. But I remember when I left that hospital, I went straight to the pub. You know, that's the way I was living. I was in the grips of this alcoholism, you know. And I lost my first job as a result of my drinking, and my journey began. You know, moving from job to job, drinking, partying. I was having the time of my life. I was living the dream. I was riding fast horses. I was drinking, chasing women. I was absolutely loving it. And then I started to realize that drinking wasn't working anymore. I tried numerous ways to kickstart my career. I had moments of brilliance. I would get myself focused. Life would be going well. I was riding in horse races. I was living the dream I always wanted. But the drinking always took me over. The constant obsession was with me to drink. And it was the only thing I knew that would fix it was more drink. King alcohol literally had a sword in my throat. I was a slave. I couldn't stop. I moved to another country thinking I would get a fresh start. I woke up the next day from a blackout and I was off again. This time I would control it. I knew if I got a girlfriend that would fix me. 100%. Always plugged into them faulty power sources, you know. I was a manipulator. I was an angry, aggressive, controlling young man. I took people hostage, actually. I went from town to town, job to job, always thinking it was going to be different. Well, it wasn't. I was there everywhere I went. Bad things started to happen. I started to wake up in the police cells, not knowing how I got there. I remember waking up one time in someone's garden had no clothes on. I was late for work. How the hell did I get there? I have no idea. I only went out for two drinks with the boys. Not remembering anything and lying my way out of situations was the story of my life. I became a morning drinker, and this was the miracle that I needed. As I remember the shakes I used to get, and the dreaded race in mind, and the paranoia was absolutely killing me. My career was up and down, and by this time, my reputation as a jockey was, he's a very good rider, but he's a raging alcoholic. Things started to take a turn for the worst. I was feeling suicidal. I would call my mum, telling her I'm coming home, that I was going to kill myself. I broke that woman's heart. I couldn't take it anymore. I can only describe the way I was drinking and living, as I was living in my own nightmare, and I could not stop. Doctors, I remember, told me frequently I was depressed and I needed to take meds, but I knew drink that was good enough for me. I remember the feeling I had every day that the world owned me. Only an alcoholic will know what that feeling is like. It was a horrific way. You know, I was so scared. I used to plug into fighting the emotional dependence on others to get that feeling of being part of, and I constantly chased the effect produced. People in the world dominated me. I remember coming to an end in the UK when suicidal thoughts became my constant companion. I was afraid to tell anyone what was really going on, showing the outside world that everything was okay, but deep down, I felt like I was being eaten alive. At this stage, I would do anything to get drink. I would go down to the local off license and steal drink. I'd actually walk up to the counter with the cheek of buying a packet of Rizla for my tobacco with a rucksack full of booze and just walk out. Desperation taking me over. A constant feeling in my head like my brain was being squeezed, not knowing that I was killing myself. I was drinking to forget about the blackouts, not knowing what happened anyway. And people kept saying to me, you need to stop drinking, Mark. You're an absolute head case. You need to be locked up. I remember being terrified. I remember being at a party once, and I was riding in race at the time, and I was doing okay. And I decided to chop this girl. I told her that was Pat Edry. For anybody that knows about horse racing, Pat Edry was one of the greatest famous jockeys at the time. I was not to know that she was Pat's cousin, so you can only imagine how that conversation ended. It didn't end too well. The effect produced had stopped working. You know, I was no longer feeling the relief. But what had been my best friend had now turned out to me living in my own self-made hell. My dad told me to come back to Ireland, and he instructed me not to drink on the journey over. He found me the next day, drunk in a small village in Ireland, after coming back from the UK on a flight. I had no idea what happened. I'd done it in total blackout. My parents tried to help me, God bless them, but they didn't know what to do. They were as baffled as I was, you know. My dad thought if he drank at me, he came to the pub with me, that he could protect me. Neither of them knew I was suffering from alcoholism. I went to see a monk who prayed over me, but nothing changed. I tried to get a job, and I remember very, very well each horse trainer that I called, they said they had no room for staff, but they had heard in the grapevine exactly what I was like. I remember the last guy that I called, and he told me to come for an interview. And I thought to myself, the cheek of this guy telling the great me who was down in the gutter to come for an interview. But I would go down there. And he watched me fall. He told me that I needed to stop drinking. And I didn't know that this guy was part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I remember I was to have one more go. I won a lot of money on the horses, actually, that I used to ride. And this was to be my last drinking session. I went missing and returned to work 2 weeks later, a very broken man. This was to be my last drink, so I thought. I remember there was this young girl at the stables, and she told me she was glad to see me back at work. But I didn't know, and I didn't want to tell her I was an alcoholic, but something inside me told me to tell her. She said she was glad to see me. She told me that her mum was too, and I couldn't believe it. She was so calm about it, you know. Her mum picked me up at 7 p.m. that evening And I went to my first AA meeting. I was cured within 2 weeks. I was sharing like the old timers. I was on the pink cloud, which I started to plug into faulty power sources. And coupled with not being able to deal with my resentments and my past, I drank again. I remember having a loaded shotgun with the police breaking the door down. I was suicidal once again. And this was to be my final drink. I ended up in a treatment center, and on my return to the real world, I finally tried my best in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor, I made a little effort on the steps, and I moved to Dubai. People told me, don't move to Dubai, you're moving to Sin City. I was a big meeting attender. I did not seem to think recovery was for me. I was quite happy doing the way I wanted. I would call my sponsor from time to time. And after doing the first 5 steps in treatment, I thought I was done. But things were not going as well as I thought. I was back at that spot again. I was fearful of what people thought of me. I was being nice to everyone in case I was not liked. I became totally dependent on my boss for his opinions for what he thought about, for what I actually thought about myself. I was crippled. And this not drinking thing was no fun. I couldn't handle it. I had nowhere to escape. I would go to meetings every day. I was so happy that I was getting that temporary relief from my attendance in AA. But once I came out, the race of mind and the uncontrollable emotions would take me over. Back to the drawing board. I'd get another girlfriend. That would fix me. I thought of my feelings, and if they weren't right, I must not be either. I was baffled. I would get a new sponsor, and this guy was a great guy. We talked a lot about my problems, actually. We played a lot of golf together, and it seemed like the perfect sponsee relationship. I got advice how to treat a woman. I remember I was good at sales. I was good at talking about this product, which was myself, but I could never actually make the sale. I realized that I was also good at fishing. So I thought if I put enough fishing rods out with good bait, I would definitely catch the fish, which was the female species. The only problem was the ones I was catching were the ones that I had to throw back. My dating skills were an absolute disaster. My old ideas about relationships was just brutal. It just didn't work. I was so contrary and argumentative, but I had no idea at the time what was really wrong with me. I was fighting with my girlfriend. I was so childish and needy. The Kim baby syndrome had followed me right into adulthood. And I had no idea why I was living like this. Sleepless nights, worrying about work. Would I get it right today? What are they going to think about me? My head was like a racehorse racetrack. I was plugging into relationships to give me temporary relief, but I was still a prey to misery and depression, coupled with self-pity. I thought once I'd stop drinking that all this would be actually over. People told me that I wasn't getting up to enough meetings. I was going every day. Oh my God. You know, why wasn't I changing? It was my constant thought. You know, I soon made a lot of friends in AA. The fellowship was great, but that was it. I was on my knees every day praying, and every chance I got, golf had now taken me over. And I remember I even gave up my responsibility of the meeting that I was chairing to play more golf. Finally, I was cured. Me, my sponsor, my AA friends were living the dream. My anger and discontentment was with me each day. I was living a lie and I knew it. The only thing I was not doing was I wasn't drinking. I plugged more into life, into what I could get out of it, using people, causing the same trouble but not drinking. The resentments and fears were eating me alive. Keep coming back, they said. It will get better. I hate those people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would call up different people until I got the one who would give me what I needed. And this is the way I was living. I had been through the steps. Why was I still baffled in an emotional wreck? I was plugging into faulty power sources so I could get the effect produced, but nothing was actually working. I moved to another job. That would fix me. This has been the story of my life. Job to job, relationship to relationship. And if I was to be honest, I was just running away from myself. I was in denial. That was my problem. If I could only sort that out, I would get back on track. I thought this was my actual lot. I'm going to live like this every day for the rest of my life. A broken man, drunk or sober. I was going to work every day. I was hating what I was doing, but I loved being around those horses. I was afraid of what people thought of me, and I didn't feel like I fitted in with anyone. I was an absolute mess. I would go see a psychiatrist, as I was really starting to lose it by this stage. After my meeting with him, he told me that I had chronic depression with a chemical imbalance. He said, you must take these meds and things will come back to normal eventually, Mark. Normal? He must have been joking. I never knew what normal was. I was always up in the clouds or I was down in the dumps. I was more or less neurotic and emotional wreck. I went to the pharmacy and I got the pills. I remember walking out that door and the relief that I actually felt of carrying them pills, but I knew deep down that this wasn't for me. I'd been in AA long enough and I knew that that wasn't the way. So I got a second opinion. And off I went the next day to see another psychiatrist and the same story, chronic depression and more pills. Something deep down inside me that told me it must be another way. I remembered my girlfriend at the time, Olivia. She was such a support. If I was to get the other way around, I would have ran. But that's how selfish and self-centered I actually was. You know, I was taught about myself and a number of others. I decided to get married. For the first time in my life, I was starting to trust another human being. Olivia, she was amazing. She was so kind and peaceful and understanding. I hadn't met someone like this before. What was she doing with somebody like me? I had a huge ego, but I didn't think too highly of myself either. The wedding was great, and I was to get to be what was to be happily ever after. It actually wasn't. I really believed that if I got married, everything would be okay. I struggled with my emotions, my emotional nature, and I was totally discontent. I was finding faults and blaming others for how I felt all the time. The king baby syndrome, it was still with me. What could I do? Talking about it wasn't helping anymore. Maybe Olivia can go for counseling. Maybe she's the problem. I even tried to push her into Al-Anon. She was the one who needed to change. It has since been pointed out to me that I have the Napoleon complex, which is the short man syndrome. With my argumentative behavior and always having to be right, I was good at keeping people at a distance. I'm 5'3" on a normal day, but most of the time I think I'm average 7'3". Then one evening I went to this meeting. It wasn't one of my regulars. I walked in the door and I met Craig. He was all happy and smiling. I thought, what is this guy so happy about? I'd known Craig for a long time and he was like me, but probably worse. I love to judge people so I'd feel better about myself. But something was different about Craig. He asked me how I was. I told him I wasn't great. And that was an actual understatement. At 13 years sober, I was dying. I was burning my life to the ground. He said he understand and he'd been where I was and he had a solution. I thought to myself, you have not got a solution for what is wrong with me. And I thought, no chance. But I would meet him the next day for coffee. He told me he'd met this guy from America called Wayne in a workshop. Craig, he gave me this USB and he said, have a listen. See if you can identify with this guy. I did and I was blown away by what Wayne spoke about. For the first time in my life, something got past my head and into my heart. I remember listening to Wayne's talk every day. And after a week, I called Craig and asked him if he could help me. We met and he started taking me through the steps and he made some suggestions like I should join the home group that he was in. But I had a home group. All my friends were in the other home group. What would they think of me if I left them? But I took the plunge. I went to the meeting. Guys there dressed smart, greeters at the door, well laid out structured meeting. but I wasn't too sure if I liked any of the people who were there. They were not people that I would mix with sober or drunk. Defiance was my outstanding characteristic. I don't know if I could do this, but I would try. I started to work and I quickly learned that there were things about myself that I had never known. My old ideas would die hard. I struggled with the construct at the beginning. Discipline and structure was not something that I liked too much. I was riddled with self-will, and I would definitely say that I was a slothful perfectionist. But I got into the steps. I soon realized that my depression, which I had had for years, was to be self-pity, and that I was born with a broken spirit. In my years of riding and of training the horses, I have seen what this broken spirit can do. When you're breaking in those feisty ones, some are unique in their own way, and they don't want to give in and will fight you all the way. If you push them too far, you can break their spirit, and it can take a lot to bring them back from that. Horses have a unique way of showing that they're not happy. They will stand in the corner of the stable and not trust people and be difficult to ride. It'd be very difficult to ride them. And so I can identify with that. I hated people. And I struggled in life with anything or anyone. You know, I was blaming the disease, but I found out that Dad had been arrested the day I stopped drinking. A spiritual malady is what that I have come to believe that I suffer from. An allergy of the body, an illness of my mind and emotions, and an underlying soul sickness. Finally, I was finding out what was wrong with me. I remember starting to feel some relief. My whole life, I was obsessive, compulsive, impulsive, and I was an excess and controlling type of person. I was always demanding that need for attention and approval. That condition rendered me restless, irritable, and discontent. All of this, which suggested that I was spiritually speaking, maladjusted to life and full flight from reality. Emotionally, I am definitely known to be a bit sensitive. I tend to rationalize, minimize, justify, and deny all my actions while causing and casting blame on other people. So circumstance and events, I would avoid detection. These symptoms I've come to know as a spiritual maladjustment, as a soul sickness, and an illness in my mind and emotions that ends in faulty emotional dependency. I had no idea what this was. You know, I soon discovered what Wayne had uncovered from Bill W. And that my craving for alcohol, which I thought was for alcohol, was not, it was for the effect produced. I was blown away when I found this out. You know, I think of my feelings and I was playing God my whole life. My problem was my unconscious separation from God. As we were going through the steps, I remember Craig told me that if I was to have God in my life, that I had to stop playing God. That it was not going to be easy, as I had always been the director. He told me that God was my director, and if I was his agent, and if I performed his work well, that I would get freedom from alcohol and freedom from the bondage of self. I wanted it. I remember feeling that of want. I wanted to change so much. I was starting to find out things about myself that I'd not heard before. And I was full of so many old ideas. I wouldn't listen to anybody. I was closed off to what was there. Remember Wayne came back to Dubai again to do another workshop. I was inspired by his energy and determination. He explained in great detail about the spiritual malady. He spoke in great depth about the steps and how he'd found out what had happened to Bill W. And he followed that path. For the first time he came to Dubai was on a 24-hour notice. I thought to myself, how could this guy be so selfless? I was actually impressed. I remember I started to become open. I wanted to find out how he recovered. I couldn't live the way I was living. I was done. The workshop was unbelievable. I remember the fellowship afterwards with the guys who had traveled from around the world to come for the workshop. I was blown away by what these guys had. They seemed happy and free. I wanted it, and so it went on. I had two sponsors in the past, great men who helped me so much. Tony, I met in an AA meeting at the beginning, who was my first sponsor, who has always been in my life. An unbelievable great guy. He is now in the same line of sponsorship as me, and as a result of the path I am now on due to the information that Wayne uncovered. And Craig B, my current sponsor, who's taking me to the next level. God has always been an issue in my life. I prayed. That's all I was doing. I had a Santa Claus God. I realized through the steps and with some more information that God could have been a group of drunks. I'd never really heard this before. You know, here I found a group that were on fire. Good orderly direction. A sponsor who was on fire in AA. His selflessness, his time and energy that he gave to the group, it inspired us all. A good orderly design for the 12 steps. This was a living that really works. With the information that I was now going through, the 12 steps, traditions, the big book, and AA comes age, I was getting the hang of what was on offer. But I remember stumbling on step 4 and 5. And I don't know if anybody can identify with this, but the old ideas were still there. I'll do it tomorrow. I remember I got so sick. I was in hospital. I had a big flare up my body. The more I procrastinated, the sicker I got. I was dying to my old self. Funny enough, when I got through step 4 and 5, I became well again. Looking at my life, this is the way I was living. I was making myself ill every time I turned to self-will. I was meeting Craig weekly, was going through the steps. We had 2 meetings a week, and we were about to start another one. Thank you. The guys in the meeting had always been great guys, and as soon as I stopped my critical judgment with them, I realized that. We were all on the same path. We all had service positions, dressed up with tie and coat. It was awesome. But I can remember that first time it was suggested to wear that, I rebelled. How dare they tell me what to wear in AA? Today I've learned that the structure and discipline of a home group and a sponsor has completely changed my life. We uncovered its problems in steps 1 to 3. Then we discussed the results of the problem in steps 4 to 9. And we recovered in the problem in steps 10 to 12. It said in our literature, we realize we know only a little. But I had known nothing. I started to become teachable. I was to find out how contrary and argumentative I really am. Damn, this is so tough. My sponsor today holds me accountable. I check in every day at the same time. I start my day with the morning review and I check in with other members throughout the day. I'm learning to live by spiritual principles. And today I focus on a line of St. Francis prayer each day as my meditation. When I'm disturbed, I get to do a step 10 and I get to take guidance on that. It's given me a chance to discover my old ideas, look at my mistakes and put that right by living in my new ideas. I never knew that the more I think of others and the more I try to help the newcomer that my life gets better. The guys are part of my group today. I've got to witness how their lives have completely changed. And as a result of the discipline and structure that we have, there has recently been a baby boom in our group. And I'm definitely blaming my sponsor for this. Because he has shown us how to show love and understanding towards a marriage. This has been one of my greatest gifts of recovery, to watch other members of AA to have love and happiness in their home. Today I can honestly say I live in a happy home. I have a beautiful loving wife and a baby on the way. There's no longer that feeling of frozen between us, like I'm watching TV with no sound. I'm accountable in my job today. I'm no longer riding the horse, but my role in the stables is much more important. I get to take and show the love and compassion for what I have, for I've learned from Alcoholics Anonymous. Attraction is what they spoke about, and now I understand. I get to help other alcoholics and pass on what has freely been given to me. And I love the people in AA for what they have done to help a drunk like me. I want to thank my great friend Tony, who is here today, and my current sponsor, Craig B. This guy's drive for AA has catapulted me to the next level. And for the members of the By the Book Speakers group, the guys I check in with each day. And for Wayne B, If it had not been for this one man's dedication to the spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, his investigation and the work for Father Ed Dowlin and Bill W. completed into emotional sobriety, and his understanding and his interpretation of what a legitimate AA request is, today I know there's a solution. I get to walk the path of Alcoholics Anonymous and to pass on the message to a still suffering alcoholic. Today I feel blessed. I'd like to thank Marty and the Pacific Group for hosting the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Eight birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything that would affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ann, and don't forget your picture.
Please email us before 6:30 that night. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to be recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. We asked somebody very special who's recording an album this week to come sing us a song. Would you please welcome Patrick S.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday alone in your house. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Patrick. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on your birthday cake. At the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at thetreasurer@pacificgroupla.org, and she can give you ways to contribute. Oh, I jumped the gun, didn't I? We have birthdays tonight. Our first birthday is for Cindy S. for 2 years, sponsored by Julie S. Oh, time out. Going back one. Our real first birthday. Our real first birthday is Amy O. for 1 year, sponsored by Lisa B. Little help there. I know there's more birthdays.
They are up on the screen.
All right. I got Amy O. Cindy S. for 2 years, sponsored by Julie S. We have a 9-year birthday for Cassie S., sponsored by Debbie K. 12-year birthday for Ilya M., sponsored by Ivani S. Susan P. for 12 years, sponsored by Lydia W. Patty C., 13 years, sponsored by Lydia W. And Mary Ann K., for 51 years, former secretary, sponsored by Clancy I. That was a total of 7 birthdays for 100 years, with the average of 14.28 years per. All right. Underneath special announcements, we have a few special announcements. Number one, I want to thank Duffy for filling in for me last week. I was on the road and I could not attend, although I did. I was just spotty coverage. So thank you, Duffy, for filling in for me. Second announcement is the 2020 International AA Conference has extended.